Our next case this morning is number 02-2063, Usha Vakharia against Little Company of Mary Hospital. Mr. O'Mara.
Good morning, Your Honor. John O'Mara representing Usha Vakharia. Your Honor, this case comes to you after a summary judgment was entered in favor of the defendant.
If I could ask you also, Mr. O'Mara, to keep your voice a little higher, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
This case comes to you, Your Honor, after the court has entered a summary judgment in favor of the defendant. And probably the overriding issue in this case is whether the statements that the court made in support of that grant were really true. What happened in this case, Your Honor, is that the court struck the plaintiff's submissions for a number of grounds, one of which was that it was filed in an untimely manner. And now the defendant concedes that the documents, the brief, the 56.1 statement, and the response to 56.1 statement were filed in a timely manner. He says that it is harmless error. But that is one of the reasons why the court granted the motion, so it's hardly in the harmless category. The court also said that it was not clear in reading his opinion whether he was referring to the brief or to the 56.1 statement of facts by the plaintiff, but he said that we referred to affidavits generally, not with regard to specific paragraphs. There were 65 such citations. Every single one of them referenced a particular paragraph. The only paragraphs that were missing from citations were a few from the defendants. The court also said that the brief did not specify or identify an issue that the court could say presented a tribal issue for a jury. On the very first page of the brief, it specified that there were two applications at issue and that the summary judgment motion only addressed one of them. The court, in its earlier opinion, noted that there were two applications at issue, but did not notice that when it made its ruling. This was very important because the defendant himself conceded, or the defendants conceded, that if the first application were granted, then Dr. Vakharia would have been entitled to immediately come into the rotation. So I don't know what we could have done to make that issue clearer. The court also indicated that we had violated prior court orders in terms of what could be argued. And in that regard, the first thing to note is that the measurement of what was appropriate was actually the second amended complaint. And the court did not look at that at all. It went back to a ruling that it made earlier on the first amended complaint. Basically, one issue that he said that we had erroneously argued was that the selection of Evergreen as the exclusive provider was improper by reason of a ruling he made in 1996. However, in 1996, he had ruled that Evergreen, Dr. Vakharia, could not complain of the selection of Dr. Roth and Evergreen as the exclusive provider in preference to her. But he did not rule that we could not argue that the selection of Evergreen was part of a discriminatory process, which was in fact alleged in paragraph 29 of the second amended complaint. The other matter that he said that we, one other point on that, the defendant in their brief, in their memorandum, argued that the proof of non-discrimination was the fairness of the selection process of Evergreen. And so, as a matter of evidence, we argued that in our final brief, because we now understood the judge wasn't going to hear anything about Evergreen in terms of a recovery basis. But we did argue it on the premise that the selection process itself was proof of discrimination and could be related to the grounds on which we could recover. The court even made a finding that the selection process was for patient care. So, in a way, we were muzzled, and yet they could argue it, and we were found to have violated the court order for doing so. The court also held that we couldn't argue that the ad hoc hearing was done in an unfair manner because he said he had ruled on that previously. What happened actually is we had, in the second amended complaint, pointed out that the hearing was not done in a proper manner, but we did not specify specifically that it was what we called a sham hearing. Basically, because the hospital attorney instructed the hearing officer and the chairman of the committee on what to say with respect to the production of documents. We had then filed an amended complaint or an amendment to that count in the complaint and pointed out that that we were going to argue a sham hearing. The court held that it was duplicative. When we then argued it in our memorandum, he indicated that that had already been ruled on and we were in violation of that order. Once again, the defendants argued in their memorandum that the hearing was fair and that proved that they weren't acting in a discriminatory way. And once again, because we pointed out that it was not done fairly, just simply as a matter of rebutting their argument, we were entitled to put that before the court. The court indicated that we didn't specify in our brief or our memorandum where in the record you could find proof of various statements, what he called conclusions. And in that respect, he didn't mention anything in particular. But when the defendant was asked to point out where it was that we had missed citing to the record, they mentioned three things. And in every instance, as mentioned in our brief, there was a statement of fact, and that statement of fact was backed up by an exhibit or an affidavit. The court held that it was making its ruling, at least in part, under Rule 12F, the Federal Rule 12F. And we pointed out that Rule 12F has nothing to do with regard to the quality or the content of our brief. It's simply, it's not the brief, the 56.1 statement, our response to their 56.1 statement is not a pleading. They are not pleadings. And therefore, the court had no basis under that rule to do that. Finally, Your Honor, after all of it was stricken, maybe it might be important to note this. The question before the court was whether in what way did Dr. Vicari apply for her privileges. The defendant took the position that she applied only for a part-time position, and she got it. But Judge Nargle found that she applied for both of them. And it's very clear that she did not get consideration for the full-time surgical opening. Judge Norville also found that, the defendant argued that she was given an as-needed job as she requested, whereas Judge Norville found that she wanted both surgical and the OB-GYN. Your Honor, I believe that basically this is a case that should have gone to the jury, and we're asking that the court reverse the summary judgment and remand it for trial.
Thank you, Mr. O'Meara. We'll hear now from Mr. Brooks.
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel. Edwin Brooks on behalf of defendant. Your Honor, I'd like to focus on two principal issues. Whether Judge Norville correctly exercised his discretion in striking plaintiff's memo in response to the defendant's motion for summary judgment, the Rule 56.1 statement, and the response statements under Rule 56 as well, which were entitled 12 N's under in his briefs, but I'll refer to them as 56 because I think that's the correct nomenclature. The second issue is whether Judge Norville was correct in granting defendant's motion for summary judgment after he struck those pleadings. On the first issue, we believe it cannot be said that Judge Norville abused his discretion. It cannot be said that he was arbitrary, and it cannot be said that he had no basis in reason to do what he did. To the contrary, he exercised great restraint. He gave plaintiff three opportunities, and each time the papers came back just as bad as they were before. They failed to comply with Rule 56, Rule 56.1. They cited inadmissible evidence, and they argued matters that were previously dismissed. Your Honors know that Rule 56.1 requires a party to file a concise statement and a response, and that they must refer to specific matters in the record. Plaintiff violated that rule by failing to contain record citations in her papers, and when there were citations, they were to reams of documents, literally an inch thick on occasion, without any specific citations. The court said, you have three times. They still violated those provisions. I'm not going to belabor all those violations. I want to highlight a couple, though. I think it's worthy. If you look at the third memo, focus to page 13, lines 6 and 7, there's a statement that cites to the 12N, paragraph 167, which then in turn cites to group exhibit 72 and exhibits 91 through 96. And I'd like to hold that up for your honors to see. 91 through 96 is this thick with the binder clip here. No more specificity than that. And this is the third attempt. Page 4 of the memo, lines 9 and 10, cites to exhibits 47, which was 23 pages long, exhibit 8, which was 10 pages long, exhibit 92, which is 25 pages, and all 66 pages of citations with no further specificity, nowhere on those pages. Page 10 cites to 12N paragraph 107, which is group exhibit 52, 35 pages in that collection of documents. The 12N statement, Your Honor, was not much better. Paragraph 28 cites the 91, exhibits 91 through 96, again over an inch thick, and I could go on and on. Again, 35 pages in one, 10 pages in another. Paragraph 79 cites to exhibit 78, which is not even responsive at all to the proposition. We cited in the third memo examples of lack of record sites. And I heard counsel here say, well, no, that's not true. There were record sites there. Well, indeed, there aren't. If Your Honor see in our brief at page 6 of the third memo, lines 15 and page 9, you will see that there are no citations following those statements of facts. Now, what plaintiff argues is if you scour the remaining statements and scour the exhibits, you'll see somehow that it gets you to the facts there. that's not what the rules call for. Judge Norgel shouldn't have to scour through the record, look for the peanut. The other thing that was wrong was plaintiff failed to cite admissible evidence. On the third 12N, paragraphs 49 through 60, there's a big to-do about these resumes with X's on them. Plaintiff makes a big deal about that throughout this case. Well, if you look at what plaintiff cites to, it's exhibits 96, 88, 92 to 93, 94, 100, 101, 103, 106, consisting of page after page after page, again, about an inch thick. And these are resumes, they're letters, there appear to be X's on some of them, but there's no foundation for these exhibits, nothing. Rule 56E says you have to have a foundation. There's no business record exception. There's no evidence of who put the X's on there, when they were done, why they were done, nothing. And if you look at the affidavits, Dr. Vicaria's affidavit and Dr. Rao's affidavits, again, you find no foundation, hearsay, rampant throughout there. And I could cite the paragraphs, but I won't belabor that. Plaintiff cites matters previously dismissed. That was another problem. There are generally three issues, citing the matters previously dismissed, Rule 56, and the inadmissible evidence. Judge Norville found on count one that what was left of the discrimination claim was the delay in processing the application. Count three, there were two issues left, failure to give full rotation and not allowing her access after the exclusive group was brought in. Those were breaches of contract. She continued to make arguments and put in her papers even after expressly said to the court by the court not to do it, arguments about bringing Dr. Roth in, discrimination, bringing the exclusive group in, discrimination. And a counsel tries to make this argument that things that were really in there really weren't in there, were in there, and maybe Judge Norgel was confused. I submit I don't think Judge Norgel was confused about his own ruling. I submit Judge Norgel knows how he ruled, reviewed the papers very carefully, and indeed, what wasn't mentioned by counsel is if you look at the record closely, there were numerous motions brought between July of 97, when that second amended complaint, which is the complaint at issue, was filed, and to the present. And we're talking motions in limine, motions to bar evidence, motions on discovery, and in each case, Judge Norgel reviewed his prior rulings and said, these are the things that are at issue. The two things relative to count two on the breach of contract, the failure to give full rotation, and not allowing her access. Not this other stuff. So it wasn't a slip of the pen. The court also properly granted summary judgment once those documents were struck. Plaintiff failed to raise the fact issue that there was a delay. The evidence submitted by defendants was that the delay was of her own making, and that her work never changed. She admitted that she had enough work. She was working just like the other people in the department. On the alleged bylaw violation, the summary judgment was properly granted there too. The court correctly found that the bylaws don't speak to how much work you get. The bylaws don't say you get full rotation. The bylaws merely grant privileges, which the court correctly found under applicable Illinois law. That just gives you privileges. It doesn't give you any right to work. Doesn't give you any right to economic benefits. We believe Judge Norgel correctly exercises discretion and exercised great patience in this case. And we ask your honors to affirm his well-reasoned opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Mr. O'Meara, you have 4 minutes.
Your Honor, based on what Mr. Brooks has just said, I assume he's conceding every point that I've just brought before the court, except that he said that in terms of specific exhibits that we weren't specific enough in our material. And I would say first on that his big point is that we put in a lot of curriculum vitae that were submitted by people who were applying for work there, and I don't see how we could avoid putting in all of them so that the court could see exactly who got the X's and who didn't. So I don't think that's a fair statement. He also criticizes another exhibit, and it's true, it's the bylaws, and we're entitled to put the bylaws in, and we did cite the particular articles when we ever mentioned the bylaws. With respect to the statement that we didn't identify a bylaw violated, we identified many of them. We never argued that any bylaw guaranteed her full employment. What we're saying, in essence, is that she was a provisional associate. Under the bylaws, the various departments, first of all, a provisional associate is only given to somebody who's going to be working there full time, and that the bylaws authorize and direct the departments to specify rules and regulations. And under the rules and regulations of this department, somebody who's a provisional associate gets into the regular rotation. Your Honor, we're asking that the court reverse the summary judgment and return for trial.
Thank you, Mr. O'Mara. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We'll move now to the third case of the morning.